We're holding on Kuf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph, fifth line. Continuing on the topic of Matnas Shchiv Merah, the Gemara says, "How who Matnasa to have a ksib to have a kosuba b'chayim uvamovis?" There was a Matnas Shchiv Merah, and we're talking about that it was a matana b'miktsas. So therefore, so it doesn't matter whether he recovers or not. Either way, as we've been learning these last few blat, he's not going to be getting back the nechassim anyway. But the twist is to have a kosuva b'chayim uvamavis. It's said in the Shnayer that this gift should be effective when he's alive and when he's dead. So what does that mean? Rav Omar Hari, so what? So fine. We can, either way, it's an irrevocable matana. But the point of the question is going to be, are we going to consider it like a are we going to consider it like a matnas bari or a matnas shchiv merah? So that Rashbam points out, we can't possibly say that the person who gave it was a bari, because then how would we have any opinion that it's like a matnas shchiv merah? So Rav Omar Harei k'matnas so Rav Omar Harei k'matnas shchiv merah. So Rav says it has the din of a matnas shchiv merah, namely that it takes effect only when he dies. And in fact that and in fact that he would be able to and in fact that he would be able to he would be able to retract it if he recovers. But because he's saying that it should, because by saying b'moves, he's explicitly saying that it should take effect only after he dies. Meaning, all this time we've been talking about a regular matnas shchiv merah. It doesn't really specify when it's going to take effect. So therefore, you can say that if it was b'miktsas, then it's irrevocable. But here, where he's explicitly said the word b'moves, then it means that he wants it to take effect only after he dies, and ein shtar l'achamisa.
But he said
So.
both. He said both.
He said
So
both. So
both
the
can
Gemara is
say.
going to deal with in the next couple of lines what Rav is going to do with the second Lashon. But the point, so rather, sorry, it will take effect after he dies, because that's how a matnas shchiv merah works. But on the other hand, precisely for that reason, if he doesn't die, then he's able to get it back. Ushmul amari k'matnas bari, whereas Shmuel says it's like a matnas bari, and he won't be able to change his mind. So let's understand their svaris. Rav Omar Harei k'matnas shchiv merah midichtiv ba b'moves, because since the shtar says that it's to take effect when in death, that means achamisa ka'omale. That means he's saying that it should take effect after he dies, like a regular matnas shchiv merah. Aye, so why did he write in there the word? Why did he write the word? The word b'chayim means a. Means simin ba'alma d'chai. He wanted to write a simin in there that he will live. It's a he didn't want to write just if I he didn't just want to write when I die. Al tiftach pela sotin. So therefore, so he wanted to add the point that may Hashem save me and I don't die and I stay alive. But primarily, Rav says he's meaning for this to take effect after he dies. Well, after he dies, so fine, it's a matnas shchiv merah, it takes effect after he dies, but the fact still remains, though, that means that im omad choizer, so therefore if he doesn't end up dying, then he's going to be able to get it back. Ushmul omar, where Shmuel says harei k'matnas bari, he says on the contrary, let's focus on the word mechay, on the word b'chayim, midichtiv bo b'chayim, since he says it should be effective in life, meaning while he's alive, mechayim koma means he wants it to be effective from when he's alive, which is a matnas bari. V'hai d'kos of uvamoves, the fact that he wrote afterwards, and in death, all that means is commando oma me'atav ad olam. That's the equivalent of saying that this gift should be in effect forever, meaning it shouldn't be revoked. It shouldn't be, for example, something that's in effect only while I'm alive, and then it'll expire when I die. No, it's going to be forever. But primarily, he means it to take effect when he's still alive, and therefore, so it would be a therefore it would be a matnas bari. So in short, that's so okay. So Shmuel says that it's like a matnas bari. Now Amri Nahudoi, and now the Chachamim of Nahudoi said Hilchsa Kavaseh de Rav. Even though usually in Dini Mominis the halacha is like Shmuel, here the halacha is like Rav. So therefore, so it's going to be considered a matnas shchiv merah, and therefore he would have the ability to take it back when he recovers. Omar Rava, but Rava says it's not so simple. Actually, here we talked about the machlokas was where it said b'chayim in life. What about if he said Rava says the ikos of ba mechayim, but if he writes in it from life. In other words, instead of Bachaim of Amavas, it says Mechaim of Amavas. Then that would be different. Rava says Kona, then he would be Koineit, because then we would say it means clearly means that he means for it to take effect while he's alive. However, the Gemara says, Omar Amemer, less hilchsa kavasei de Rava. The halacha is not like Rava. There's no difference between whether he says bachayim or mechayim. Either way, it's going to be considered, like Rav said, a matnas shchiv merah. It's going to take effect only after he dies, and therefore, im omad choizer, if he does recover, he is going to be able to retract it. So the Gemara says, why does a Maimer have to tell us that? Omalei Rav Ashi la Maimer Pshita. Isn't that obvious? The halacha is not like Rava in that. The Ha'amri Nahadori Hilchsa Kavasei the Rav. Didn't the Chachamim of Nahadori say that the halacha is like Rav, where he says Bachaim of Amaves? So why would we think that Mechaim is any different? And the answer is Ma'udatema Mechayim Murder Rav. On the contrary, you would think that maybe Rav would agree when it says Mechayim, which clearly means that it should take effect when he's alive. So therefore, Kamash Malon, therefore we need to be told that there's no difference, and therefore that the halacha wouldn't be like Rava. The halacha would be whether he writes Bachayim or Mechayim. Either way, it's the same thing. So the Gemara tells a case. There was a case of a person who came to Rav Nachman in Nahavda, where Rav Nachman was the Rosh Hashiva. So this was a case exactly like this, where there was a shtar that said Bachaim of Amavis. Shadre l'kameder of Yumi ba'abel shum tamya. But instead of paskening the din himself, Rav Nachman sent this guy to told him to go to the Yumi Ba'aba in Shum Tamya. And Shum Tamya is the name of a place elsewhere in Bavel. Apparently, Rav Yumi Ba'aba lived there. Now, why did Rav Nachman do that? Why didn't he just pasken the din straight out? Omar, Rav Nachman says, Pocha Asra de Shmuel, because here Nahavda is the city where Shmuel used to live. So therefore, Heichi Neved Kavasei the Rav. So how could we paskin like Rav? Even though, yes, we said the Nahadoi themselves, the Chacham of Nahadoi themselves, said the Halacha is like Rav. Nevertheless, Nachman is saying in Shmuel's own city, we shouldn't paskin against him. So therefore, if he wants a psak din like Rav. I guess he doesn't want a psak din like Rav, to be exact. Rav would say the shchiv merah is able to take it back. Here, this guy received the matana; he would like to be able to keep it. Nevertheless, though, the point is that it's not derech eretzik to go paskin like Rav in Shmuel's city. So he tells him, go to this other place, and Rabbi Yumi Ba'aba will paskin for the din for you over there. Okay. The Gemara tells another case. There was a woman who came for a din Torah to Rav. Same thing. There was a shtar that said b'chaim of amavis. So Rava paskin for her according to his own shita. We just said before that there's, according to Rava, there's a difference whether it says mechayim or bachayim. In this case, it said mechayim uvamavas, and Rav was and Rava had said before that means that it takes effect when the giver is still alive. So now, in other words, so this woman had herself been a shchiv merah previously, and she had given out such a shtar, and now she recovered. So now she lost out. Have a kotar delay. So she was bothering him and bugging him and nudging him that you didn't paskin correctly for me. Apparently, as we're going to see from the story over here, she was knowledgeable enough to know that the halacha in this is like Rav, and therefore, and like the Nahadori said, and like Amema said, that the halacha is like Rav across the board, whether it says Mechaim or Bachaim, and therefore, so she's bugging Rav, how could you paskin for me otherwise? So, Rava says to the Papa Breder of Chanan, who was his scribe, who was writing out shtaris for him, he says, fine, Zilk Sovla, write out for her a document that says she's entitled to get back the Nechasim. But at the end of the shtar, this shtar is like a Maisa Beis Din. It's a report of what happened in Beis Din. So fine, go write out for her a psak din that she's entitled. But at the bottom of it, write also the words Socher Alehen Oimatum. He can hire workers at their expense, or he can trick them. This is a quotation from a Mishnah in Bava Metzia. Rabbeinu Gershom says actually that Rava at the time when this case happened was teaching this Mishnah, was teaching that part above Metzia Teres Talmidim, so therefore it was in his mind. We learned in Bava Metzia, we had a case like this. You hire workers to do a job for you, so the din is poyo yochol lachzeboy afilu b'chatzi ayom, that a worker is able to quit the job anytime he wants, because a yid is not an eved to a fellow yid, he's an eved only to Hashem, ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. However, the Mishnah describes over there what happens if the one who hired them, what if we're talking about it's a dover ha'avod? What happens because the workers quit, then the job is going to be destroyed or lost? It's a time sensitive thing, and it has to be done as soon as possible. So then the Mishnah says over there, in that case, he's able to hire new workers at the expense of the old ones, meaning basically that he's going to hire new workers. And if they charge more, then he can charge the extra amount to the original workers. He can tell them, basically, you caused me a loss, and therefore you have to pay for the fact that now labor costs are higher. Oimatan, or the Mishnah says, he can trick them. He can tell them that he's going to rehire them at a higher wage, and then end up not paying them that higher amount, but rather the original amount. In any case, the point is, Rava is using that over here as a way of writing at the bottom of the shtar. So on the one hand, he wants to, this way she'll stop bugging him. But on the other hand, anybody who looks at the shtar and sees that phrase is going to understand that it means that he's doing it only in order to trick her, only in order to get her off his case. Umrah, but she caught on to it. She realized what Rava had done. So she says to him, she says a curse to him, Litba Arbe, may his, meaning your, ship sink. Apparently Rava had ships with merchandise, and she's cursing him that a ship of his should sink. At Uye Kamatasli, how could you be misleading me like that? How could you be giving me a shtar that on the face of it says that I'm right and I have the right to get back this gift, and then you're writing in there something that says that you're just doing this in order to trick me? Well, Rava's Talmidim were concerned about her curse. After all, we know, Alti Kilas Hedyet Kalabainecha, don't let the curse of even a simple person be something unimportant in your eyes. Here we have in this week's parasha, we have an illustration of that. There's many reasons that are brought why Yitzchak became blind in our parasha, and one of them is because back in Parashas Vayera, with the story with Avimelech and Sarah, he says Hinei Huloch Ksusenai, and we learned about it in Bava Kamma, that he says, because you covered my eyes and deceived me and complained and claimed that you were Avraham's brother, that you were Avraham's sister, therefore in return for that, there should be blindness in your family, and it came true in Yitzchak. So now Rava's Talmidim, when they heard this woman saying that, they were concerned it might actually come true. Am shinu l'moni de Rava b'maya. So they took Rava's clothing and soaked it in water, figuring like this, it'll be symbolically, like instead of his ship sinking, his clothes will sink, and that would be enough that the curse is fulfilled that way, and therefore that way the actual boat doesn't need to sink. It didn't work though. Nevertheless, though, Rava was not saved from the consequences. In the end, a ship of his did sink because of her curse. A couple of now, first of all, the Rashbam points out that we see from this then that the halacha is not like Rava. The very fact that the Gemara brings the story at the end of it here shows that in the end the halacha is not like Rava, and therefore, like Amemar had said, there's no difference between Bachayim or Mechayim. Still, we have to ask, the fact is, isn't Rava entitled to Paskin like his own Shitta? So actually, the Ritva and the Nimuka Yosef say that no, actually, the fact is, since his is only a Das Yochid, then therefore, so he shouldn't Paskin like his own opinion. He's entitled to his opinion, but when it comes to practical psak halacha, he should take into consideration that most of the chachamim are saying against him, and then we said before, Amemar says the halacha is not like him, and therefore he should have paid attention to that. So because of that is why the Eved Shtimei made that ultimately it was able to ultimately it was able to happen to him. Then there's another interesting answer brought from Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who says that after all. You have a very, very similar story, actually. There's a Gemara in Gittin that tells a very similar story involving Rava bar Rav Huna. So not the same Rava as our Gemara over here, but also a Chacham named Rava, where there was a psak din that he gave out, which again, this woman disagreed with and said, how could you do that? And she cursed him that his chair should be overturned. So there, his Talmidim also, they turned over his chair, literally, so that the curse should be fulfilled that way, but nevertheless, still Rava bar Rav Huna ended up suffering more severe consequences from it later. The point is, Reb Chaim explains over there, and we can say over here as well, that why is he doing it right in her presence? There it was, he kept on telling her that why you don't know what you're talking about. Here it's that he actually wrote it in the shtar in her presence. Fine, he needs to write something in order to make it clear that to a future dayan who looks at the shtar, not to actually give her the nechasim, but nevertheless, he didn't have to write it right there in her presence and cause her tsar, and therefore that made it possible for this to take effect. In fact, the Meiri mentions in this connection, you see, it shows you the importance of avoiding litsonus. You could say on Rava's level, this is litsonus to write out a shtar like that and then write a thing in that that basically disregard everything I said before, and therefore and then Rava being a tzaddik, then he's held to a higher standard, and therefore, sure enough, he did end up having a boat of his sin.
If Narda says the halacha is like this and this person, how do we say that the end's not? Like, when do we say the halacha stays the way it is? When do we say, no, that changes?
No, so that's it. In other words, we're saying that the halacha is not like Rava. In this one case, Rava Paskin, like his own shitta, and there were consequences for it, actually. The bottom line is, therefore, the halacha is not like Rava. The halacha is like the Nahudoi, namely that the halacha, in turn, that the halacha is like Rav, and that there's no difference between whether it says Bachayim or Mechayim. Either way, it's considered a regular matnas shchiv mera and has all the dinim of that. In particular, that if they recover, then they can get it back.
So the halacha is like Rava. Then why would he?
No, the halacha is not like Rava. The halacha is like Rav.
Oh, okay.
The halacha is like Rav against Shmuel, that it's considered like a matnas shchiv mera. Rava had drawn a distinction. If it says Bachayim or Mechayim, then if it's Mechayim, then they're koina, and we're saying the halacha is not like that. Yeah. Mishnah says, Loi kosav ba shchiv mera. What happens if the shtar, what happens if there's a shtar with a loshen of matona in there? Now, we learned earlier in the Gemara that in order for it to be a matnas shchiv mera, it has to be that the shtar itself contains a loshen that says that he was a shchiv mera at the time. When he was sick and lying in bed, then he told us such and such. So now, loy kosa ba shchiv mera. What happens if the shtar doesn't say a loshen, this loshen in there, that he was a shchiv mera? And now we have, and Tosfa says, you could, it mean, now on the other hand, it also doesn't say that he was a bori. You could have the vice versa, where it explicitly says, well, actually the Rashbam, both the Rashbam and Tosfos points out that you could have a loshen that would be typical for a matnas shchiv mera, where you write in there, he said the following when he was sick and lying in bed. Or you can have by matnas bari, where it says clearly he said this when he was healthy and walking on his and able to walk unaided in the street. So so now it doesn't say either of those lashonas in the shtar. So now so who I'm a shchiv menacha, you see. So now he says the giver says I was a shchiv menacha at the time, and therefore I should have the right to take it back. V'hein emin bori ha'yisa, and there and the other people, the recipients, are telling him you were healthy at the time, and therefore you shouldn't be able to retract it. So the mayor says he would have to bring proof that he was a shchiv menacha, and if not, then that if he can't bring such proof, edim or whatever, then he would have to then they would get it. Give it a mayor. What kind of raya and why the mayor says he would have to give why the mayor says he would have to give such a proof? We'll see in the Gemara. So whereas the Chachamim say they want to take away the Nechosim from him, so they're the ones who would have to bring the proof. He's the Muchzak, after all. He's the one who has the Chazaka on the Nechosim, and therefore they would be the ones who have to bring the proof that that he was a Shchiv Merah. And if not, then he's entitled to take it back, as we're going to explain in the Gemara why the Chachamim say that. A point, by the way, that the Rishonim bring up is, listen, all this time we've been saying that a matnas shchiv merah doesn't require a kinyan and a matnas bari does. So then in that case, and here we're talking about, on the face of it, we're talking about there was no kinyan. So what do you mean? The recipients are saying it was a matnas bari, then we'll tell them, well, there was no kinyan, so it doesn't work as a matnas bari. And if there was a Kenyan, we learned before that we said a matnas shchivna. Okay, we said a matnas shchivna with a Kenyan. We had the whole machlokas Rav and Shmuel whether it works or not. So what's the scenario over here? Was there a Kenyan or not? So Rabbeinu Yonah brings that that we're talking about the shtar doesn't say one way or the other. So then the argument is: was there just a verbal Kenyan, or was there an actual Kenyan with a Kenyan suder? And then the Ritva gives a different explanation. Yes, the Shtar says there was a Kinyan, but he's saying that it wasn't just a matnas shchiv merah, it was mitzava machmas misa, which is the distinction that we've made before, where he explicitly says, I'm giving these matonis because I feel that I'm about to die, where therefore then we said, even if there's a Kinyan, and even if it was only b'miktsas, then he would be able to take it back. So they're saying that, well, there was a Kinyan and you were a body, therefore you don't get it back. He's saying, yes, there was a Kinyan, but I was mitzava machmas misa, and therefore I should be entitled to get it back. So again, Reb Meir is saying he would have to bring the proof, and the Chum are saying they would have to bring the proof. So the Gemara starts off. There was a case of such a shtar matana. Now have a kos of ba, it's said in this shtar, part of the Loshon, it said, kad have a ksir, the Romi ba'arse, it said that this shtar was written when he was sick and lying in bed, that he gave his nechosim. But it did not say the usual loshen that you would say after that, from this illness, he passed away. So now, in the end, he died. But the question is, so usually, in other words, the point is that you could have a person is sick and he writes out and he has such a shtar written out, then he recovers, then he becomes sick from something else, and then he eventually dies. So the usual loshen and a shtar would be, they would write that not only that he was sick at the time, but that he never recovered from it. From that very same illness, then he died. Here it said the first half of the loshen, but not the second half. So now there's a claim that maybe he recovered in between, the gift is revoked. In fact, Tosfos points out it wouldn't even be that they're not even necessarily saying that he explicitly revoked it. But once he recovered from the illness, then automatically we would assume almost by default that he was chozer, that he retracted it, because again the whole point was that he had done it in figuring that he's going to die. And now we're saying there's a possibility that maybe he didn't. And the problem was also, now usually you would say, okay, call in the Edim and ask them. The scenario would be that the Edim are not available. So Omar Rabba, So Rabba said, "Hare mes vare kivre mechia cholol." Well, look, he's obviously dead now. We have a kever showing that he's dead. So therefore, we have every good reason to say that we would go according to what's called chazaka dehashta. We have a chazaka right now that he's dead. So therefore, we should say the chazaka would be that he died from the same illness during which he had had the shtar written. So in other words, we would say that we find him dead, and therefore that means he must have been sick there, because he must have been sick, because after all, people usually don't just die suddenly. So therefore, it's more likely the chazaka would tell us that it was the same sickness, and therefore that's that. Omale Abaya, but Abaya says, not really so. If you're going to go according to the fact that he was sick, still the fact is most sick people do recover. So Hashta, Abaya tells him, now let's consider, draw an analogy. Uma Svina, Madach in the case of a ship. Interesting that we have twice on the same daf over here, something about a ship. You have a case in a Mishnah in Gittin where you have those people on board a ship. And we know that ship was caught in a storm, and we don't know what happened to them. We don't know, were they saved in the end, or did the ship sink and everybody drowned? So now we say, most such cases when the ship sinks, then everybody drowns. And nevertheless, the Mishnah says, because we don't know, we have to apply the chumras of the living and the chumras of the dead. So that would be, for example, an example of that would be, we know there's a halacha. We actually just had an Ein Yaakov as well. Interesting how Ein Yaakov is tracking the Gemara here a lot of times. Anyway, you have a din that a bas koyin who's married to a Yisrael and has children, whether she has children from him or not, as long as she's married to him, she's also to eat truma. And then on the other hand, you have that a bas Yisrael who's married to a koyin is allowed to eat truma as long as her husband is alive. After her, in either case, after her husband dies, it also matters whether they have children, but that we're not dealing with that angle on it right now. So now, suppose you have on board that ship was a Kohen, the husband of a Bas Yisrael. We would have to consider Mitzad HaSafek, her husband may have died, and we know he was on that ship. We don't know what the fate of that ship was. Therefore, she's not going to be able to eat truma. We know that he was on the ship. We know the ship was caught in a storm. We don't know what happened. Therefore, Ms. Suffolk, she won't be able to eat truma in case her husband has died. On the other hand, if she's a Bas Koyin married to a Yisrael, she's also not allowed to eat truma. We can't say, well, my husband has died, therefore I should be allowed to, because her husband may still be alive. So the point is, Abaya says, you see that in that case, even though in that case, most of the time, when a ship is caught in such conditions, then usually it sinks and the people die. Nevertheless, we have the suffix. So then Abaya says, cholin sh'roiv cholin l'chaim, when it comes to sick people, most sick people do recover. In fact, the same Mishnah in Gittin over there mentions that if you have a shliach is bringing a get from Medina Sayam, and the husband was old or sick when he left, then nevertheless he's able to give the wife the get and assume that the person who gave it to him, that the husband who gave it to him, is still alive. So most sick people do recover. Like Kol Shekein, how much more so that we shouldn't say that he died from that illness, but rather of, yes, it's true, of course he's dead now, but why should we say that it's because that was necessarily from the first illness? Why shouldn't we say there's a high likelihood that he recovered, as most sick people do, and then he died of some other illness, and in that case, then meanwhile the gift was revoked. So Tosfos compares it with another case in Gittin over there, where you have a case that again the Rashbam has brought the case where you give her the get Cheskas Shukayim, but the difference is that there in the end he's still alive. Here at the end of it he's dead. So, but the question is when he died and what illness, not when he died, what illness he died from. Anyway, Abaya argues against Rabba in short, and says you can't really compare You can't say, not you can't compare, you can't say that we should go according to Chazaka de Mehashta, the current Chazaka, and use that as a basis for anything, because you shouldn't say that. We should consider against that the Chazaka that most sick people do recover. Now, the Rashbam says, the next piece the Gemara is going to say, that Rabbah holds in this regard like Rav Nosson. So the Rashbam points out, we don't see that Rabbah changed his mind. We don't see that he retracted his view because of what Abaya said. Evidently, he held there's enough of a difference between them. And since the Gemara is going to next say that he holds like Rav Nosson, and the Gemara mentions in various places Rav Nosson was a dayan. That was his profession, is among the Chachamim. He was a dayan. He judged Dinei Mominus, and therefore he's an expert in Dinei Mominus, and the Halacha is generally like him. Then that would mean that the Halacha is like Rabbah over here. There is a machlokas who's shown him on that, because there is a machlokas who's shown him on that. And the Rif and a number of other Rishonim say that no. Later on, the Gemara is going to say that Rav Nosson, which the Gemara is going to quote now, holds like Rav Meir in our Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to bring Rav Yaakov, who the Gemara is going to bring next to Machlokas, Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov holds like the Chachamim. Well, the Halacha is like the Chachamim, and therefore that would mean the Halacha would have to be like Rav Yaakov against Rav Nosson, and therefore in turn that would mean the Halacha is not like Rabbah. And there's further discussion about that. We've shown him discuss that Rabbah himself may have changed his mind. On top of that, also, there's a different Gersa over here at the top of the Amud, that maybe it's not Rabbah over here, but rather Rava. So in that case, then at least that later on, we're going to see something in the Gemara that implies that Rabbah holds, the Gemara is going to say further on that Rabbah himself says that Rav Nosson is not like the Chachamim of our Mishnah. And again, since the Halacha is like the Chachamim of our Mishnah, because the Halacha is like Yochid, again, is usually like the Chachamim against Rav Meir, Rabbah against Yochid, then that would imply that Rabbah himself must have changed his mind. But then the Rashba says over here, the Gemara is not necessarily saying Rabbah, it's Rava, so it's not a matter of changing his mind. But in any case, he agrees that the Halacha is like, that the Halacha is not like Rav Nosson, and in turn not like Rabbah or Rava in our Gemara over here, but rather like Abaya. So in short, you have a machlokas who's showing him who the halacha is like. Do we accept Rabbah's point, harekivre mechia cholov, that we go according to the chazaka de mehashta, or is the halacha like a baya that you have to compare it to that case of a ship that's caught in a storm? And Shulchan Aruch paskins, in fact, like the Rif and the Rosh, and not like the Rashbam, meaning that in fact the halacha would be not like Rabbah, but rather like Abaya, that we don't say that we go according to the Chazaka de Mehashta. Rather, we would say, unless we have solid evidence that he passed away from that illness, then we would say that in fact it may have been a different one, and therefore that he, in between, he recovered, and therefore the gift is revoked. With that said, though, that Amar does bring over there from the Nimuka Yosef, That when we say you need Eidos, so the Eidim can be people who took care of him and while he was sick, and they can determine whether it was the same illness or whether he recovered in between. In fact, the Nimuka Yosef in turn brings from earlier Rishonim, from the Ramban and the Ritva, that really it doesn't even need to be. They don't have to have been with him 24/7. They ask the people, the members of the household about his condition. And if they tell him that in fact he is getting worse and worse, then that's good enough Eidos for Beis Din to say that he died from that illness. Avraham Moshe, you were asking the other day what happens, for example, if the Eidim are contradicted by doctors, so that would all factor into this. In other words, we would say we have to get Eidos whether in fact he was a Shchiv Merah at the time, and whether he died of that illness, or whether he recovered in between. Bepashtos, doctors would be like any other Eidim in that regard. I mean, I guess in any case, Beis Din has to cross-examine the Eidim and make sure they know what they're talking about. So obviously, generally, I guess we would assume that doctors are likely to know more of the facts, and therefore we may well end up going according to them. But it's not so much because they're doctors, but because they come and give their address.
Now, if he didn't appoint anybody else, his items, so can we say that he didn't do it because he already did it the first time around, and he was relying on that?
No, because again, im oman choizer, we're talking about that this was a matana bakuloi, and that this was a matana bakuloi, and if he recovers, then he gets it back. So he doesn't. So fakir. If he doesn't explicitly say afterwards, if he doesn't do something to demonstrate that there was a matana to somebody else, then it's going to go back to him, and then it's going to go to his yoshin. So the basic question is over here again. If the shtar had explicitly said that it was a matnas bori, then there's nothing to talk about. If the shtar had explicitly said the full loshen that it says by a shchiv mara, namely that he said this when he said the following when he was sick in bed and he died of that illness, then the edim that are signed on that shtar would be that's all the evidence we need. Here we're talking about the whole point is it said that he was sick, but it didn't say that part about it would that he died of that illness. So now the question is whether maybe he recovered in between, where Rabba says we don't have to worry about that because we go according to the Chazaka, the Mehashta, and Abaya is pointing out that most sick people recover. So, and again, you have this machloket.
They both hold the same thing. They both hold that now that he recovered, and this is a new
No, there's a big
circumstance.
difference. According to Rabba, the point is that fakert, we don't have any particular reason to say that he recovered in between. The fact that now he's dead. And the fact that now he's dead indicates that we should go according to the chazaka de mehashta. Right now, the chazaka is he's dead, and the chazaka in turn would be that it was from the original illness. And Abaya is pointing out to him, no, roiv cholam l'chaim, and therefore you shouldn't say that. Just the opposite, you have against that a chazaka that most sick people recover, and therefore that he did recover in between. So again, now you have a machlokas rishonim, who the halacha is like. The Rashbam paskins like Rabbah. Most of the other rishonim paskin like Abaya, and in Shulchan Aruch, Itaka brings that opinion that therefore, so we would need evidence to say that it was the same illness, and if not, then we're going to assume like Abaya says that it was not, that it was a different one, and therefore that the gift is revoked. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Omer of Huna Breder of Yeshua, Kiman Ozla Hoshmaita de Rabba." According to which Tana is Rabba making a statement? Rabba, who had said that we go according to Chazaka de Mehashta, that we look at the fact, look, now he's dead, therefore we have every reason to say that it was from the same illness. That would be Kudab Nosin. Specifically, Rabba is going like Rab Nosin in that regard. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, in a case like our Mishnah, where it doesn't say one way or the other whether he was a Shchiv Merar or Bori. Now, there's a slight difference, remember. In our Mishnah, it didn't say at all any Loshen of Shchiv Merar or of Bori. Here we're talking about, whereas Rabba's case, where Rabba and Abaya were arguing about, is where it did say that he was a Shchiv Merar, but it didn't say whether he died of that illness or a different one. In any case, so a Braisa says, in the case of our Mishnah, namely where it doesn't say either Loshen at all, so me motzi miyad mi. So the Braisa says, in a case like that, where it didn't say Bori or Shchiv Merah, who gets to take away from who gets to keep the property and take it away from the other? Who motzi miyadehen below raya? The giver will be able to get it back from the Mekablim without even any proof. He doesn't need to bring a proof that he doesn't need to bring a proof that he was a Shchiv Merah because he has the Chazaka on the Nechasim. Now it's true that right now he's healthy, but we're not going to say that that means that before he was healthy, he may well have been sick at the time, and then he recovered, like Abaya says. So therefore, so the din would be he gets to take it away from them without even bringing any proof. V'hein ein metzin miyadei ela b'raya. If they want to take it away from him, then they would need to bring a raya that he was a bori at the time. Tosfos points out why the double loshen. Of course, if he can take it away from them without a raya, then they would need to take it away from him with a raya. What it means is, in other words, even though the shtar doesn't state that he was a bori, and therefore they have, and therefore, and therefore, Even though the shtar doesn't say that he was a bari, if they can bring a raya that he was in fact a bari at the time, then that will override the fact that the shtar didn't say one way or the other. In other words, we wouldn't say, well, once the shtar doesn't say that he was a bari, then automatically that means he wasn't, and therefore they have no basis. No, if they're able to bring a proof that he was in fact bari at the time, then they will be able to get it. That's the point. That's the point of the expression ein mitzien miyada ela baraya. They won't be able to take it out away from him unless they have a raya, implying, but if they have a raya, they will be able to. Divrei Rabbi Yaakov. So that's what Rabbi Yaakov says. So it comes out so far that Rabbi Yaakov is saying something similar to what Abaye had said. Just because right now he's healthy doesn't mean that before he was healthy as well. And therefore, so unless they can prove that he was when he gave this matana, then they're not going to be entitled to him. Rab Nosson Omer, Rab Nosson says, no, im borihu, if right now he's healthy, then fine, we go according to Chazaka Dehashta, then we say the way it is right now is probably the way it was before, and therefore that he was a body. So therefore, so if now he's body, all of the Haviraya Shoy Shivmara, then Fakert, he's gonna have to bring the proof that he was a Shivmara at the time, that there was a different status. The Im Shivmara who, if right now he's a Shivmara, Alayim the Haviraya Shabari Haya, then on the contrary, they're the ones who are gonna have to bring the proof that he was healthy at the time. So meaning, in other words, so we see that Rab Nosson says that you go according to Chazaka Dehashta, you go according to the current Chazaka, and you say whatever it is now is presumably what it was before. To be exact, Tosfos says, really, I mean, you also have, listen, if there's a suffix, then anyway, you can't hamotzim chaver l'varaya. So what we really, the main point is, the point is, though, that we see from the first case where he's healthy, and we say, we go according to that, and we take away the nechosim from him and give it to them on the supposition that if now he's healthy, he was before as well, and we see from that Rav Nosson says even to take away money from one person to another, we can go according to Chazaka Demehashta, which fits with what Rabbah was saying at the top of the Amud. So that's what Rav Huna Breda Rav Ishua is saying. You see that Rabbah's opinion follows Rab Nosson's, that you go according to Chazaka Demehashta, not only as far as keeping money, but even as far as taking money from one person and giving it to the other. Okay, so the Gemara brings Omer Rab Elazar Ulatuma B'machloikas. Now you should know, as far as dinim of Tumah V'Tara, that's going to be subject to a machloikas. Namely, in other words, the same machloikas of Rab Yaakov and Rab Nosson is going to affect also a din in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. Now you have like this, there's a concept in Halacha that if you have a suffix of whether a person became Tomei or whether an object is Tomei or whatever, so it's going to depend, one of the factors that goes into it is whether it's in Rishus HaYachid or in Rishus HaRabim. The Gemara elsewhere learns it respectively from Psukim, that with a soita we see that we consider her tamei misafik, and it's a rishus hayachid. There's only her and the potential boil over there, and we say that she's tamei misafik. And then on the other hand, and then on the other hand, when you have a rishus harabim, when you have an area where there are rabim defined as three or more, then we say a safik tuma over there is tahar. And again, we learn that from Sukkim, we learn that from a case involving bringing the Korban Pesach to Tumah. Whatever it is, this is an established halacha that when you have a Safek Tumah, one of the factors that goes into it is whether it was in Rishus HaYachid or Rishus HaRabim. Now, you have certain kinds of places that sometimes may be one and sometimes the other. The definition of Rishus HaYachid and Rishus HaRabim, as far as the halachas of Tumah V'Tara, is not the same, is not exactly the same as it is for Hilchos Shabbos. Sometimes you have a place which is considered a Rishus HaRabim as far as Shabbos, but a Rishus HaYochid as far as Tumah, or vice versa. One of those examples is when it comes to fields. So like this, Titnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Taharos, Bika. When you have a valley full of fields, now there are times of year when people are walking through those fields, and there are times when people are not. So suppose you have this valley full of fields, is surrounded by a fence that Rashbam explains. So therefore, as far as Shabbos is concerned, it would be a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Now, Midrabbanan, it doesn't have all the dinim of Rosh Hashanah Yachid. If it's more than a certain size, you're not going to be able to carry in it. Nonetheless, it's still considered Rosh Hashanah Yachid on a Daraisa level, in the sense that if you were to carry or throw something in there from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim into it, then you'd be chayev. Only Dirabbanan, because it's more than a certain size, you can't carry any. Anyway, so you have this area, Bimoisachama. So then during the summertime, when the grain has already been harvested, so then it's considered Rosh HaRabim. So then Rosh HaYochid LaShabbos, Rosh HaRabim LaTurma. Then as far as Shabbos, it would still be considered a Rosh HaYochid, because it does have a fence around it. As far as Turma, it would be considered a Rosh HaRabim, because many people walk through it. Whereas during the winter time, when the grain is growing over there, Rosh Hashanah Yochid, Lakan or Lakan, then it's going to be considered a Rosh Hashanah Yochid for both purposes. So therefore, so Rabbi Elazar says, you should know the same machlokas is going to apply between Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Nosson, is going to apply in this kind of case. So a person comes with a shaila. I went into this area, and there was a Suffolk tomb over there. I don't know whether it was during the summertime or the wintertime. So we look at, according to Rav Nosson, we would go according to Chazaka de Mehashta. We would say, well, what time of year did he come and ask the Shaila? If he asked during the summertime, then we're going to tell him that it's considered now Rosh Hashanah Rabim, Latuma, because people walk through there, because there's no grain or anything growing in there, so people commonly use it as a shortcut. And to a certain extent, they're allowed to. We learned back in Bava Kamma, it was actually yesterday's Shlosha Perukim of Rambam, about the takonis that Yeshua made when the Jewish people conquered and divided Eretz Yisrael. And one of them is that you're entitled to walk through paths in people's fields up until the rains start, and then the farmers are plowing their fields, and you don't want to ruin that. Anyway. So according to Rav Nosson, we would go according to Chazaka de Mehashta. So if he asks during the dry season, then we would tell him that you're Tohar, because right now this place has a din of Rosh Hashanah Rabim, and therefore we extend that back to when you actually went in there, because we don't know whether it was during the summer or the winter. If it was in Yomos HaGashamim, if he asks during Yomos HaGashamim, during the rainy season, then we're going to tell him you're Tomei, because you go according to Chazaka de Mehashta. That you go according to Chazaka de Hashta. That would be according to Rav Nosson. Meanwhile, according to Rav Yaakov, then we would say, until now we had a Chazaka that he was Tahar. So therefore, so only if Edim come and say that he went in there, be Mosag Shamim, only then is he going to be Tamei. So Rabbi Elazar is telling you the same machlokas where Rabbi Nosson is saying you go according to Chazaka de Mehashta, and Rabbi Yaakov is saying that you go according to the Chazaka of the conditions of the thing at the time, meaning, in other words, again, Rabbi Yaakov had said, for example, that here he's a bori right now, but still that doesn't tell us that he was a bori when he gave the matana. He may well have been a shchivra, and we go according to the fact that he has the nechosim, he's the muchzak and the nechosim, and Rabbi Yaakov takes that and considers that the primary factor. Well, by the same token over here, this person has a chazaka of being tohar, and therefore we're going to say that he remains tohar unless we have proof to the contrary. Whereas Rav Nosson is going to say that you go according to Chazaka de Mehashta, and therefore you have to look at the Chazaka of what the circumstances are of the field right now, whether it's the rainy season or the sun or not. Tosfos actually points out that the Gemara, when it discusses this in Shabbos, says here that Rashbam is saying that it's talking about that it's surrounded by a fence. But the Gemara actually mentions over there that maybe not necessarily. Some Amiroyim over there learn that we're talking about that it's not surrounded by a fence, but so therefore it would actually be considered a Carmelis, and we're calling it Rosh Hashanah Yochid only because it's not Rosh Hashanah Rabim. In other words, maybe for the purposes of Hilchos Shabbos, it wouldn't be considered a Rosh Hashanah Yochid, as far as that a person would be chayev for carrying in and out of it from Rosh Hashanah Rabim. We just mean, in other words, that it's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabim, in that he would be chayev for carrying it for Amos. But that's a side point. In any case, the point is that primarily we're talking about over here when it's considered Rosh Hashanah and when it's considered Rosh Hashanah. That part everybody agrees to, but the machlokas is now when he asks a shayla later on and he's not sure when it was that he went in there, where Rabbi Elazar is telling us you're going to have the same machlokas between Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yaakov about what the din would be. Tosfos also mentions, by the way, in this connection, Rabbi Hanano had wanted to explain the reason why it's considered Rosh Hashanah in Yemosag Shamim is because people don't go in there because it's muddy and wet. But Tosfos says that's not why. It's because there's the grain is growing over there, the crops are growing over there, and you're not going to walk through there so as not to ruin them. So the Gemara brings Omar Rava. So Rava brings in this connection another din. Now the Rashbam explains that this is not a continuation of what Rabbi Elazar had said. It's not, there is a girsa, HaGoyis HaBach brings that there was a girsa, V'Amar Rabba, namely, therefore, that Rabbi Elazar is saying a din, that you have that Mishnah, and further, that Rava mentions a particular detail within that, and then Rabbi Elazar is addressing that and pointing out that you're going to have the same machlokas, Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yaakov there as here. The Rashbam says can't be. Rabbi Elazar is before Rava, so he's not going to be referring to something that Rava says. Rather, Rava is mentioning a separate point over here, having mentioned this point about Rosh Hashanah versus Rosh Hashanah. Then Rava is going to mention another relevant detail over here. So Omar Rava, Lo Shonu El Shalai Ovru all of Yemosag Shamim. Now this would only apply that we're saying that during the summertime it's Rosh Hashanah as far as Tumah, because again, people are always walking in and out of there. But Rava says that would apply only if ever since, again, the Rashbam is learning that we're talking about that the place is fenced in. So after they fenced it in, if there hasn't yet passed a rainy season since they fenced it in. But Rava says, I will offer all of Yemosag Shamim, but if after they fenced it in, the Yemosag Shamim have already passed, once it became a Rosh HaSayachid, during the wintertime, Rosh HaSayachid, Lakan or Lakan, then it remains a Rosh HaSayachid even during the summertime. So why would that be? The Rashbam says two possibilities, either that there's an actual svara, even midaraisa, to say that because it's fenced in and there was a period of time of Yemosag Shamim when people are not walking through it, then it retains that status even afterwards. Or the other possibility, you could say it's a chumra d'rabbanan to consider a Rosh HaSayachid across the board. Then the Rashbam brings from Rabbeinu Hanano, who says that Rava is in fact arguing with Rabbi Elazar. Here the Rashbam had said, you can't say Rabbi Elazar is referring to what Rava had said, because Rava was after Rabbi Elazar, but you could say Rabbeinu Hanano learns that Rava is disagreeing with Rabbi Elazar. Here Rabbi Elazar had said that when the guy didn't know whether he went in there during Yemos HaKamo, Yemos HaShamim, then his status is going to depend, on what season he asks the shayla in, and that in turn is going to be subject to a machlokas, Rab Nosson and Rab Yaakov. Rava is saying, according to Rabbeinu Hanano, that no. Rava is saying that when do we say, now, according to that, shalai ovru olav, which means the tumah being in there. When the suffix tumah that's in there was there only during the summertime, then we would say, and then we would say we can consider, is it a Rosh HaSayachid or is it a Rosh HaSarabim? But if we have, since the Suffolk Tumah developed in there, let's say you have, you don't know whether there's a caver in there or something, and meanwhile the rainy season has passed, then Rava is saying it's going to be a Rosh HaSayachid for both purposes, meaning then it's not going to be subject to the Machlokas of Nosson and of Yaakov anymore. So in short, we have two different ways, according to the Rashbam, of learning what Rava is saying over here. Is it that once we mention the point of Nosson and Rab Yaakov that their machloikas impinges on this halacha, then Rava is telling you, by the way, you should know that if over all of Yemosag Shamim, if it's already the place was fenced in and now Yemosag Shamim have passed, then it's going to be considered Rosh HaSayachid regardless? Or is Rava saying we're not talking about how long it's been fenced in, we're talking about how long has the tumah been there? And then Tosfos has problems with both of those explanations, and discusses in some detail. And Tosfos brings a third possibility when we say like over alayu moisak shamim. So yeah, it does mean We are talking about, like Rabbeinu Hananel says, we're talking about since the tumah has been, the suffix tumah has been there. But what we mean is, in other words, so here we know that since this person passed through that field, the Yemos HaGeshamim haven't happened yet. But we don't know. But again, he doesn't know whether he went in there during the summertime or during the winter. So now what we're saying is, so on the other hand, what we're saying is if he doesn't know which season he went into, and since then Yemos HaGeshamim passed, even if he asks during the summertime, then Rava is saying it's going to be considered Rosh Hashanah of the Tumah, because then you can't say Chazaka de Mehashta, because, it's more likely that it was during the winter, and during the winter, it's going to be considered Rosh Hashanah Lakan or Lakan. So that would explain, in other words, Tosfos points out, if it was just a matter of Rava arguing with Rabbi Lazar, like Rabbeinu Hananel explained, then why doesn't the Gemara bring this in any other place? There are other places in Shas where it brings this whole point, where it brings this whole point as well, and the Gemara doesn't bring this, and the Gemara doesn't bring this over there. And according to the Rashbam also, according to the Rashbam also, we would expect it to be in other places. So therefore, it's relevant specifically over here, where we're pointing out that it's subject to the Machlokas, Rabbi Nosson and Rabbi Yaakov, then it's relevant to point out that even though, according to Rabbi Nosson, we would say Chazaka de Mehashta, Chazaka de Hashta, that would go according to the current Chazaka, there is going to be a factor to consider, says Rava, whether in fact, whether in fact, not only he doesn't know which season he went in there, but since then Yemos HaGeshamim have passed, then it's more likely that he went in there in Yemos HaGeshamim, and therefore that it's a Rishus HaYochid, and therefore he's going to be Tomei Nesachim. So that would be why we're bringing it specifically over here. Okay.
When a tzvua is growing after the winter, so people still want to have people, strangers, walking around their fields?
So when we say Yemos HaGeshamim, we mean, at the end of the Yemos HaGeshamim, at the end of the winter time, is when they're going to be harvesting their grain. So at that point, then there's at that point, there's nothing preventing people from walking in there. So we don't mean, in other words, we mean Yemos HaGeshamim, we mean the season, we mean the rainy season, the time when the crops are growing over there, after which Yemos HaChama is already going to be the time when it's harvested. Yeah.
During harvesting, people don't walk around in people's fields, right?
During the harvest itself, not. But so we mean Yemos HaGeshamim. We mean, in other words, the time when people are commonly walking around in there, or not. And the truth is, really, once the grain has grown, then there's less of an issue people walking through there. We're concerned that people are going to steal the grain or something. We're just talking about, you don't want people to be walking in there and trampling on the plants. Once they've already grown, which they do during Yemos HaGeshamim, then you have less reason, and fine, let people use your field as a shortcut. They'll know not to trample on the plants. So there's enough people. Remember, in order for it to be Rosh Sarabim Latruma, all you need is three people minimum. So you have enough people are going to be going through there. You may even have those people, maybe the workers themselves. Fine. But the point is, during the Yemos HaGeshamim, they're going to be generally staying out of there.
So the amount of people for Arabim and regularly is a major difference. The three people makes it Rosh Sarabim.
Three people like Rosh Hashanah, that's what we're saying. So therefore, that's the point, in other words. So it's not even we have to wait until the harvest necessarily. Once the grain has grown, then already the owner has less of a problem with people walking through the field over there, because at that point they're not gonna be trampling the grain anymore. So Tosfos says exactly that point. So the rainy season is Mishatered Revia Shnia. Once the second rainfall of the season falls, which is sometime in Cheshvan, and the point is that because Misham Va'elach G'delim Azroyim, from then on the seeds are growing, Gedurisa Seregal Mazekas Lahem, and stepping, trampling around the field is harmful to them. But so the point is, in other words, once they're fully grown enough that people aren't going to be trampling on them, then there's not an issue anymore, and that's going to happen at the end of Yemos HaGeshamim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, the point is, again, we had this machloikas of Rav Nosson and Rav Yaakov, primarily on Dini Momonos, which we're saying now has an implication as far as Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara as well, and as far as whether, so again, who the halacha is like. So the Rashbam had said the halacha is like Rav Nosson because he's a Dayan. But on the other hand, the next piece of Gemara is going to say that Rav Nosson is only like Rav Meir of our Mishnah, and Rav Yaakov is like the Chachamim of our Mishnah, and that would indicate the halacha would have to be like Rav Yaakov. And again, most of the Rishonim do paskin that way. Okay.
Why?
Because in general, in a Mishnah, we usually paskin like the Chachamim against the Das Yochid. In this case, we have Rav Meir and the Chachamim. That would mean the halacha would be like the Chachamim, even if that means going against Rav Nosson, who was a Dayan.
Well, what they call Chachamim, they're all Chachamim. Chachamim.
Nobody said they're not Chachamim, of course, but you have the Chachamim means the majority, means the Rabbin. Yochid Rabbin, Malacha Rabbin.